The legislative session is winding down, but what's going on with a plan for the state's budget deficit? Hundreds of millions have been cut from the budget, but that isn't nearly enough to balance it. Governor Bill Walker has pushed for getting rid of some oil tax credits, instituting a state income tax, and combining savings and other accounts into the permanent fund to try to shore up the state's budget in the future. Are his ideas gaining traction with lawmakers? Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott joins us for a status report today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Commercial, sport, subsistence, personal use. Some hear these labels and think conflict. The Salmon Project sees connections. Join 10,000 Alaskans whose lives are connected by Alaska's salmon. Visit salmonlife.org to experience the stories. And find the Salmon Project on Facebook to join the community. Salmon Life, Salmon Love. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Including today, and if you count the weekends, there are only 13 days until the legislature hits the 90-day session mark. The most urgent work before lawmakers and the Walker administration is finding a way to future fiscal stability. Will a realistic plan emerge in the next 2 weeks? Last week, we heard from advocacy groups who are pushing for action this year on the budget, and today we have the state's top executives on hand from Juneau to tell us what's happening. Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott are in KTOO studios. Hello, Governor and Lieutenant Governor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Governor, let's just launch right in here. Are you seeing progress from lawmakers on a fiscal plan that you can support?
Well, we're seeing progress in some pieces of a fiscal plan. And I guess what our message has been is that a piece here, a piece there isn't a plan. And so we want to make sure that because the way we've developed this is that one piece impacts folks differently. And so without this, the corresponding piece of it to sort of balance it out, it's not as fair as it needs to be. So that's really what the challenge is, to make sure that the fairness remains of what we have put together. There's lots of pieces of the plan. As I've always said, there's enough pieces for everybody to find something they don't like, and that includes those pieces that I don't like. But it's not about what I like. It's about what we need to do as a state.
If you'd like to join our conversation today, we have Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott on Talk of Alaska with us, talking about the budget and the plan for the future. You can join us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. Or if you're calling in the Anchorage area, that number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Governor, on the 23rd of March, you sent a letter to lawmakers saying a full plan must be put in place this session and laying out your new sustainable Alaska plan. Tell us about that plan and what you think are the must-haves for this year.
Well, we need to have a plan going forward that we can pinpoint a date certain where we will have a balanced, sustainable budget. In other words, have the programs in place, have the laws in place that we know that even with everything we submitted under the new stable Alaska plan, it will require a drawdown of some from our various savings this year and a little bit next year, and then it becomes in 2019. It's not only balanced, but it's sustainable going forward, and that's really the key word: is sustainable. So we have got to get off the volatility of oil. We've got to stop sitting back, hoping the price of oil is going to skyrocket and solve all the problems. It's not. We just don't believe it's going to do that. So it's time we make that transition off of the high dependency of oil at 90% and bring it down to about a 20% dependency, which is more in line with what we're receiving now.
It's also more in line, Governor, with the reality of the marketplace today, and as the state sees going forward, that the notion of a possible price rebound in oil is not being forecast by anyone that studies these things. The other aspect of sustainable, as you've stated, is that all of those pieces of the plan, when they come together, you've stated very clearly, need to be fair. They need to impact all sectors of the economy, our society, regions of our state, people of Alaska, in a way that no one is unfairly treated. And that balance is something that is so important.
A lot of Alaskans are continuing the call for more budget cuts. Tell us how much has been cut to date and the impact on the deficit because of those cuts.
Well, we've gone from a budget in 2013 of $8 billion down to 4.7 is what we've where we ended up, 4.75 where we ended up, and it continues to come down from there. So it's about a we've come down about a 41% reduction in the budget, and others I know are continuing to look at that. But my concern is this: as we continue to wrestle with $100 million cuts, the deficit's about $4 billion, and so we need to make sure that. I mean, cuts alone, they're an important piece of it. They were the first piece we began with, and the legislature has certainly been working with that as well. But that alone does not resolve the significant issue. So it's got to be a combination of a lot of things. You know, reduction in spending is one, but we can't rely solely upon that.
We are getting some email traffic. We have an email from Tom who says, keep the PFD as it is, but claw the money back with a higher income tax and a separate tax directly on the PFD with the rate sunsetting every few years, so it has to be reauthorized. He says, most people agree eliminating the income tax was a mistake. It would have been better to put the rate at or near zero. What are your thoughts today about the idea of an income tax?
Well, we have it as part of our mix of what we're proposing, and it's one that there's a balance between whether it's an income tax or a sales tax. There were a lot of folks that were, you know, it was a little bit of a close call for us on one versus the other, but I think we went with the income tax. The income tax offsets a bit the impact of the permanent dividend, you know, bringing it back to the average we've had over the last many years in that range of $1,000. So the income tax offsets that a bit. The other piece of it is that a lot of municipalities have sales tax, and so we would be stacking a state sales tax on top of the local government sales tax could impact them. And the third thing is that we have last year we had about $2.6 billion of out-of-state workers drawing about that much of $2.6 billion in wages were drawn by out-of-state workers. And a sales tax would have minimal impact. Or they would not contribute much to our solution. So an income tax would. That's about $30 million that it would bring in roughly. So And some have come in and said, you know, years ago we had a much higher sales tax than we did back in the pre-oil days. And so we've modeled that. We've looked at that as far as that, if that makes more sense to do that, to go with just a stronger income tax. A lot of pushback saying if we're doing a dividend, you know, a full dividend check and doing income tax at the same time, it's a sort of creates some fiscal challenges. So it's not been easy to we spent the entire summer meeting with Alaskans and started at UAF and Fairbanks campus for a few days, the Alaska Dialogue. And then we have traveled the state and listened to lots of folks, lots of input about, you know, all the various different pieces we propose. So there's no one lever, no one button you can push and solve. It takes a whole lot of levers to make this work.
And the income tax level, Governor, that you've proposed is very low. Mm-hmm. It is a simple calculation against the federal income tax that of course every taxpayer pays or every earner pays. And it is one amongst a series of revenue proposals that I know in the work that took place over the course of the entire summer works hard to balance the impact of any of these revenue sources on Alaskans so that no segment of Alaska's population suffers in any unfair way.
You know, that's true. And one thing we're going to put up is sort of the schedule so that people can sort of go to the schedule and see what under the current proposal, what they would pay. I know that a family of four with two children making, say, $50,000 a year, their impact would be about $15 a year on the income tax as it's being proposed now. It goes up from there, obviously, to a single payer of $100,000 with a single payer would have about a 1%. Actually, it's about a little under 1% as far as what their impact would be. So it'd be about $1,000 at that point for $100,000 a single payer. So there's a matrix showing there's a schedule of how it would impact so people can actually see. And people are pretty surprised at the impact on some of the taxpayers would be lower than they anticipated.
And Governor, did you say that's on the state website or it will be?
It will be. We haven't put that on there yet, but we have that just so people can go to that and kind of look through their own situation, their own number of people in their family, their income, and can get a feel for how much we're talking about.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott are on hand today, joining us from the studios at KTOO in Juneau to talk about the state budget. If you have ideas you would like to share, what do you want to see done to help the state out of its fiscal mess? Are you willing to pay an income tax, use permanent fund earnings, raise other revenue from companies doing business in Alaska? Now's your chance to call in and share your ideas with the governor. 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-8255 or 1-800-478-TALK in Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We have an email from Diane who says, any changes to the PFD has to be taken off the table. The PFD has a direct impact on our state economy. Taking money and funneling through the government is wasteful. The greatest negative impact will be on rural Alaska, an area that can least afford to be impacted. And we have on the line Dave from Cordova also with comments about the permanent fund. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, Lori. Good morning, Governor. Good morning. And Lieutenant Governor. I'd like to say I supported you in both your runs for governor, Governor Walker, and I'm really troubled by this plan that is not really a plan in my mind regarding using permanent fund earnings. I called in last week and stated that this was written by wealthy people for wealthy people, and that it affects us at the lower end of the economic spectrum, first of all, disproportionately. And not only that, the wealth in this country continues to migrate to the top percent. In fact, 10% of the earners of the top took 50% of all income, and the top 1% has earned 20% of all income since the recession. A permanent fund check right now at $1,000 is worth $400 in $1,982. And of course, everything has gone up markedly in the interim. My solution, if it, and it's rather hypothetical with gerrymandering, is don't get in there now. Wait until November, and perhaps we'll even have rational people that we can deal with in the legislature. I fear we're socializing the losses and privatizing the riches again and again. And a lot of these companies have taken advantage of the high oil prices and state subsidies. Now they want us to dig them out. I just think we're obligated to take a hit as a state because of our profligate ways. We're taken from everybody for the sins of the few, as far as I'm concerned. But I'm willing for taxes. I'm lifelong like you, same age. But touching that fund, that just really, really bugs me. So anyway, I appreciate your efforts, but that's my opinion.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Governor, would you like to respond?
I would. First, I want to thank Dave for calling in, and also I like it when someone says something they don't like and suggests another alternative. We appreciate that. A couple things on that. One is, and also the email you read from the email, that's a good question. She was absolutely correct that modifying the permanent fund does impact rural Alaska disproportionately. We certainly recognize that, and we absolutely struggle with that. And one thing that I assume everybody knows, if we do nothing, we sit back and do nothing, the permanent fund dividend program goes away in under 4 years. It goes to zero. So we know that will be a major impact on rural Alaska. So we want to make sure that, you know, we call it the Permanent Fund Protection Act to make sure that it remains permanent. We don't continue to draw down, every year on our savings and cause that to go away. Dave's point is as far as the issue of on the income taxes versus the permanent fund. It's a balance. We didn't get here overnight. Obviously, this is something that has built up over the years as far as some of the issues that in our budget size. Apparently it was assumed that oil prices would always go up, and somehow the oil became a renewable resource, which of course it's not. So it's the combination of the drop in oil prices as well as the throughput in the oil pipeline is down, in the 500,000 range of barrels a day versus in the mid-80s, it was in the 2.1 million barrels a day when the last time we had this downturn. So, we're trying to find a long-term solution on this, not just a quick fix for a downturn. We believe this is closer to the new norm of where we're going to be on oil. And so, the Permanent Fund Dividend Program has served and does serve a critical a function in Alaska. We certainly realize that, and that's why it's so difficult for us to, suggest any changes to it all. But again, if we sit back and don't do any changes to anything, the whole program will go away in under 4 years. So that's not what we're interested in.
If you're wanting to join our conversation today with Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott, you can join us at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. Or locally in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Governor, you put forward a plan for increasing the minimum production tax on the oil industry from trying to raise it from 4% to 5%. That got stripped out. Do you think you'll be able to make the case for this again?
Well, we'll continue to have that discussion as it moves through the process in these last remaining days. It's that and making sure that there's a hard floor on the taxes and also the tax credit. I mean, it was a tax credit program. It's really where someone goes out and spends money on oil and gas and we pay for it, a portion of it. It's something that began in 2006. I think it was a well-intended program at that point, and it had about a $10 million cap on it per company per year. Then it moved to $25 million. And then the cap came off, and we're up in the $700 million range per year, headed to well over $1 billion per year. And it's just unsustainable. So, yes, we did look at that pretty closely because it's just tough to provide those kinds of funds to a particular industry, and certainly the oil industry has done a lot of great things in Alaska, but it reaches a point we're just not at a place that is sustainable at all. So when we're cutting, we're looking at taking money away from children on the permanent dividend program, as far as a reduced permanent dividend program, we're looking at all sorts of reductions across the state in services, impacts on seniors, et cetera. It's appropriate that the industry also participate in that process as well, because it's a huge dollar amount, and it's one that we just can't step over that and say and hold anybody harmless. No one's been held harmless in this situation. We've all had to come to the table, and so it's not inappropriate for them to participate as well.
There is legislation currently in the Labor and Commerce Committee that would tax permanent fund dividend checks at 35%. Does this accomplish the same thing as a state income tax? How do you see that bit of legislation?
You know, I haven't seen that. I was traveling yesterday. I had not seen that legislation itself, so I haven't had a chance to analyze what that consists of. And you know, what I like, the positive thing is that there's lots of discussion in June about how do we resolve the problem. And there's no discussion about, I haven't heard anybody say, we don't have a problem. So how we resolve it is, you know, more options on the table, I think, is good. But, you know, with 13 days left, at some point we need to pick up the plan. That would be a piece of the plan. Certainly it's not a plan, but it's and I know that's not the way it is designed to be. But we'll look at that and see if that makes some economic sense to do it that way.
Would it be cheaper to reduce the amount of the PFD rather than ramp up a tax collection division?
Well, in some respects, it would, but again, it gets back to that fairness piece of it. You know, I guess, you know, a lot of times people will compare Alaska to a private sector company, and a private sector company doesn't have and they won't be able to reduce differently. Sometimes it's just a balance sheet, you know, exercise. It's not a balance sheet exercise for Alaska because of you know, the kind of Alaska we want to have. Our Constitution provides more function for the state to perform than probably any other state in the nation. And we're very unique with our rural Alaska. We don't want to disproportionately impact one area versus the other. So it's a different exercise for us as state officials than it would be in the private sector just trying to reduce spending.
Have there been any studies about what it would take to, we did eliminate the income tax in Alaska. We didn't maintain it. Former Governor Hammond said, take it down to $1 a year, but leave the system in place. We don't have that system in place. Have there been any work, any studies done to kind of look at what it would cost to ramp up a tax division, an income tax division for the state?
There has been. I don't have the exact number. Commissioner Randy Hoffbeck has that, and we can certainly provide that. But we have looked at that. There is a cost associated. Actually, that's a good question, Lori. It's a cost associated with every revenue source. And what we don't want to do is have a revenue source that we collect a dollar and we incur a cost of 65 cents to collect that dollar. We want to look at the ones that make the most sense from that standpoint as well.
Mm-hmm. With an income tax that is tied directly and simply to the earnings of the federal income tax return, one of the reasons that the sales tax, as it was examined, as Governor Walker mentioned, was replaced essentially by the presentation of an income tax was that the cost associated with the implementation of the income tax was also meaningfully less expensive. So all of those issues have been examined.
It does seem like there's a little bit of a catch-22 here because there's been reductions to state government through budget cuts, but yet if there were going to be a tax division put in place, that would mean that state government would have to grow to some degree or perhaps reshuffle. What kind of impacts are being currently felt that you're seeing already based on the cuts that have happened to state government now?
Well, we have certainly had some impacts as far as on the size. Obviously, in 2014, October 2014 to October 2015, it's about, I believe, about a total of 1,400 less people either through attrition or layoffs that includes the state government, universities of Alaska, Alaska Railroad, et cetera. So we certainly have seen that. That does have an impact. It's things don't get done quite as quickly as we would like to see things done because there's just fewer people to do it. There's no question about that.
Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Rob is in Ketchikan. Hi, Rob.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning. Did you have a question?
Actually, I had a comment about the state budget. We all know that when state budgets are flush, agencies in all forms of government seem to increase numbers, spending, and whatnot. So now that we're in a downturn, I think we need to implement a plan that I've never heard put forth before. But I think the agencies themselves are the ones who can determine how to reduce numbers, reduce budget, and maintain efficiency. So my plan would call upon the agencies when natural attrition occurs, and typically agencies are grouped in groups of 15 to 20 people, and let's say that one of the other upper echelon people retire. Normally, hey, they're just replaced. Everybody kind of moves up the ladder or they go shopping around for a replacement. My plan would say the remaining people in that agency would pool their mental resources and determine if there's a way for them to cover that spot with the existing people, that they would redesign the agency to become more efficient. The agencies themselves are in a position to determine if they could do that. Now, if they could do that, I would say that everybody in that agency should receive a one-time monetary reward, because people are going to have to maybe figure out how they themselves can become more efficient. But agencies, as soon as an agency with, say, 20 people in it have had three people retire, maybe they can be down to 17 or even 16.
All right.
And figure out a new way to become efficient and save the state money. And that's sort of a long-term approach, but I'd like to see it implemented in one form or another.
Well, Governor and Lieutenant Governor, you were just talking about some of the cuts that have already been taking place through state budget reductions and state government workers. Is some of that very thing that Rob has suggested taking place?
You know, it is. It's a good suggestion from Rob, and something we've been doing for actually since December of 2014. To a certain degree, we formalized that with a hiring freeze order, and also on travel as well. So we've had a number of situations where that has happened. Additionally to that, we have, rather than waiting for folks to retire, we've also certainly have had some layoffs, but we're doing a consolidated review as far as, you know, everybody has an IT department, everybody has different departments. And so we brought in somebody to take a look at, you know, if everybody has an accounts receivable, accounts payable, how do we consolidate that into one? And it's been done in other states. And so we brought in someone that that helped do that in other states to do consolidation of services. And so we're in the process of doing that now. And other states have been very successful in that. And we're doing that right now ourselves. But it's a good suggestion from Rob.
All right. We are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott about the state's fiscal situation and what the plan needs to be for the future. And we'll take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We've got Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Mallott on the line with us from the studios of KTOO in Juneau. We're going to go back to the phones for a moment here. Noreen is in New Lotto. Hi, Noreen. Well, did we lose Noreen? I guess maybe we did. All right, let's go then to Chris in Anchorage. Hi, Chris. Did you have a question?
Good morning. Yeah. You're probably aware of the history of politicians trying to take dip into the PFD, and you are aware that, you know, three times now since the 90s, people have spoken. And also, I would like you to kind of address the intent of the framers of the PFD and how they intended it to be used for the good of the people, and also whether or not, you know, I mean, I know you're pushing to have a portion of, at least a portion of the PFD taken. I would advise against that, but if I would like you to just address, you know, your thoughts on the intent of the framers.
I might just comment quickly if I could. I spent 8 years as a trustee of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. I spent 5 years as the executive director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The Permanent Fund was created at a time, of course, when Alaska was very flush with revenues from Prudhoe Bay oil. And the legislature, Governor Hammond, other governors over time wanted to divert a significant portion of revenues for the future. Governor Hammond, as Governor Walker mentions, gave a very prophetic talk and also wrote about the fact that there will come a time when we will have to use the earnings of the Permanent Fund in order to replace oil revenue as it begins to decline. No one forecasts that oil at the time that Governor Walker and I were elected was just about $100 a barrel. It's now in the high 30s and fluctuates. The deficit is roughly $4.1 billion of just under a $5 billion forecast budget, and the use of permanent fund earnings is, in my judgment, absolutely timely and appropriate, but it needs to be done in a way, which the governor's plan does, so that the fund continues to grow and that it can, over time, over the long term, produce enough income to create the kind of balance that the governor mentioned, which is roughly 80% over time of the Alaska revenue stream available for budgeting coming from earnings of the permanent fund and from a range of other much more modest revenue sources, and oil revenue going to roughly 20%. That is a very significant turnaround and necessary for a long-term sustainable revenue flow.
All right. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. Let's go back to the phones again. We have a number of calls stacked up here. Dario is in Anchorage. Hi, Dario. Did you have a question?
Yes. Good morning. Let me take it off speaker real quick. I guess my concern is for rural Alaska, and I live in Anchorage now, but I've spent about half of my 61 years in the bush. And sales tax seems so unfair, also taxing the PFD rather than income is unfair. I would say include it in an income tax. But back to the sales tax, where a gallon of milk costs four times as much in a village store as it does at the Cars store here in town, they would pay four times the sales tax, and it wouldn't capture any of those commercial fishermen or oil field workers that live outside the state. I also feel that we need to raise our taxes on mineral leases, oil production.
Are you supporting income tax? Is that part of what you would support?
Yes, I would support an income tax along with increased taxes on industry, and PFD being the last. And I would like to see sales tax really be off the table, because that ought to be for the local government.
All right. Well, thank you, Dario, for your comments. Governor, any response to that?
Yeah, I do. And Dario, thanks for calling in. And that was also one of the criteria that steered us away from the sales tax was that very example of the, again, a disproportionate impact on different parts of Alaska. Because we also use the gallon of milk analogy, and you're absolutely correct about that. And I also want to touch on Chris's comment earlier about the dipping into the permanent fund. We need to always emphasize that we're only talking about the earnings. We're not talking about the corpus of the actual body of the permanent fund. You can't do that without a vote of the people. And so that we're trying to protect the dividend program. So we're not reaching in any way to the actual corpus. That would not be that's not allowed under our Constitution. That's constitutionally protected. So but anyway, I wanted to make sure that was clear as well.
Well, Governor, why don't you kind of flesh out that idea of what you would like to see as far as rolling all of the accounts together into the corpus of the permanent fund and oil revenue in the future? I know that that's been part of your idea for kind of stabilizing the permanent fund going forward so that it could continue to pay out some form of a dividend, but also help pay for state government. Would you flesh that out a bit?
I will, Lori. You know, it's the volatility of oil is the problem. The price of oil. We have our you know, we tie our operation of government to the price of one commodity. And when oil is up, lots of money is flush. When oil is down, we're in these situations. So it's a very volatile commodity. It's a very difficult way to try to fund government on the volatility of oil. It would be like a two-income family saying, let's put our monthly paychecks into a 401k retirement account and let's pick one commodity and live off of that to pay our mortgage, car payments, health care, those kinds of things. So it's really so we're trying to get off the volatility of oil. And where do we put the volatility of oil? It's still going to be part of our economy. So we're saying we put that into the permanent fund, have a sustainable draw every year off of the earnings that we can count on. It doesn't solve the whole issue, but our stability is the permanent fund is invested across the world in very sort of solid returns, and so there's stability in that. So use that as our be able to fund education, public safety, healthcare, and those kinds of things out of the stability of that. Doesn't solve the whole issue. That's why we need to look at other pieces of it as well. But it really shifts over to a more stable. We knew someday that was going to be there. I mean, Governor Hammond lectured on it fairly relentlessly back in the 70s, saying if we don't make this change, living off the price of oil, you know, this day is going to come, and this day is here. And so none of these decisions are popular. They're certainly not politically popular. They're not personally popular and not personally comfortable for Lieutenant Governor Milot and myself. But it's not about us. It's really about the future of Alaska we're focused on.
Lieutenant Governor Milot, you were talking just recently about your work on the Permanent Fund Corporation Board. You also spent a number of years on the corporate side at the helm of the Sea Alaska Native Corporation. Are there lessons from the corporate world that you're bringing to this conversation and helping with working in tandem with the governor on how to resolve the state's fiscal situation that can be gleaned from your years of work on the corporate side?
Well, both as a corporate CEO, I was also a member of the board of a number of banks here in Alaska and in the Pacific Northwest, served on corporate boards. One of the things that obviously we need, we talk about it, but my corporate experience just tells me that it is so critical to Alaska's future, is that we have an economy that continues to grow. And it's important to note that if, for example, every piece of Governor Walker's legislation to close the fiscal gap, a $4 billion gap in a $5 billion budget, roughly, and every piece were put in place, we would still only be growing Alaska at the rate of inflation. And as, again, Governor Walker has said, we need to put this behind us so that we can begin to grow Alaska again. We need jobs. We need an economy. We need to invest in Alaska's future. Alaska, and I'm not sure it's arguable, is the one state more than any other that requires public investment to drive private investment in terms of infrastructure, in terms of having the qualities of life and the kinds of things that investors look for in order to make judgments about where they put their dollars and grow the economy. And that's why it is so critical that this legislature put this issue behind us so that we can begin to grow Alaska again, grow the economy, grow our communities, grow our infrastructure, be able to attract the kind of investment that allows for jobs all across the state. That is so critical to our future.
All right. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Malott. Let's go back to the phones. John is in Dillingham. Hello, John. Did you have a question?
Question and a couple of statements. I will start with the statements. You know, Lieutenant Governor just mentioned that we're barely able to sustain inflation growth on the economy as is based on oil right now. And that is understandable, but for some reason, the last decade, the government and mainly the government sector has grown well above inflation. I mean, right now, if we were at inflation, we'd be around $3.8 or $4.0 billion instead of $5.2. We've got to get in there, and more cuts have to be made. One easy one is quit paying for all the unfunded PCNs out there. That's $200 million. Drop our Medicaid back to basics. That's another $200 million. And restructuring the education system can easily draw another $200 million. We've got to get the numbers down because we're not going to see any high oil prices. And that's my big question here is how many years is it going to take for to balance the budget under this new sustainable plan? And with the oil price average that you're using when you come up with your projections, and I'll hop off the phone. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Governor?
Thank you, John. Good questions. We think that under the plan we've submitted, it can be a balanced sustainable budget by 2019. It doesn't happen overnight. We have to have a plan to get there. The reductions, we will continue to look at reductions every year, because that's not something you do one time. We look for the consolidations. So that's important as well. You know, the other piece that I want to emphasize is that, you know, right now Alaska has the lowest personal taxes in the nation, and plus a dividend program on top of that. If all the measures we have proposed pass as we have submitted, Alaska will still be among the lowest in the nation on personal income tax. I think New Hampshire might be a little bit lower than us, but then we will have a dividend program, which they don't. So it'll still take us back down if you count that as the lowest in the nation. So it's not that we're sort of, you know, going up the middle of the pack in any shape at all. We'll still be at the very lowest in the nation, and we're pretty pleased with that. We want to keep it that way. So. And, you know, I've always said we don't have a wealth problem. We have a cash flow problem. So we need to manage our wealth in such a way that we don't have a cash flow problem. Our cash flow problem is going to eat away at our wealth. So it's a combination of all of those. And so it's no, as I said before, no one easy lever to pull. They're all a bit unpleasant in some respects. But we are trying to make it as broad-based and the least impact to any one particular group out there. So it's, you know, that's why it's taken a while for us to get the plan together. We submitted early in the session to give the legislature plenty of time to go through it, have hearings on it, take input, changes. No one likes change. We don't like change, but change is inevitable, and we need to make some changes, unfortunately.
All right, let's go back to the phones. David is in Anchorage. Hi, David.
Hey, good morning, Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott. I want to thank you for being available for my question and other Alaskans' questions. As you know, or you may not know, that Alaska has more state government employees per capita than any other state in the nation. We are overburdened with government. I want to see the state budget cut. And it seems to me, it appears to me, rather, that what the state wants to do is manage my budget and doesn't want to manage its budget. But I would like to focus on education. You know, K-12 education, as you know, is the biggest piece of the general operating budget. It's about $1.8 billion when you include federal and capital construction projects. And we have miserable results. I actually call it the pipeline to poverty, our K-12 system. What do you suggest or recommend to improve our K-12 education system so that every student has an opportunity for success in life, both those in the urban areas and in the rural areas? And I'll take my answer offline. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Governor?
You know, we are in the process of making some changes in the Department of Education. We recognize it sounds like your numbers are accurate from what my recollection is, and also accurate that one of the concerns we've had is that, you know, we've had the same menu for education for a long time, and I'm a big supporter of career and technical education, CTE. I've seen some schools around the state that have that, and they're very, very well attended, very popular. They come out of school. It keeps them in school for one thing, and they come out of school with a trade, they want to go on to college, they can. But we have a model that assumes everyone's going to go on to college, and that's not necessarily the right model. And so, at some point, I mean, those that don't stay in school are much higher than we'd like it to be. So we're looking at ways that we can implement the CTE model elsewhere. And again, where I've seen it done, it's been so. We were in Nome, and we went to the Nantech facility there, and saw on a Friday night at 6 o'clock, full of kids were welding, building, putting together a gold dredge, and putting together all the pieces for that, as well as the business model. And I mean, just, that's the kind of, educational system that, we shouldn't, make the assumption that there's only one destination for each student. The destination is the same for each student. It's success. And everyone defines success a bit differently. So we also want to make sure we have an economy in Alaska. So our biggest resource that we're exporting is our best and brightest sometimes. If people just leave Alaska, they can't find a job. And so we want to make sure we have an economy that keeps our young people here and gives them a reason to stay in school and to finish their studies and come out with an opportunity for a job.
Governor, it's...
Lieutenant Governor Malott.
It's been the highest priority of our administration with regard to spending, but it is clear that education, as the governor has said, as the caller has said, that we need to increase the quality, that we need to spend smarter, that we need to have educational leadership across our system, across our state, that leads us to a quality system. It's important for our children, obviously. It's also important for us to be able to live in the competitive economic world. If we do not have a high-quality educational system that people know will give their children the best education here as they might be able to achieve anywhere else, we aren't going to be able to attract the kind of, again, investment, grow an economy that this state needs. I'd like to comment quickly, if I could, on the caller's question about the per capita investment in state employees and state government that this state has. I'd also like to state clearly that the Walker administration is clearly focused on reducing the cost of state government, making it as efficient and productive as humanly possible. But relying on per capita ratios is something that has always bugged me, because we, in terms of our total state population, are the size of the city of Seattle, a small, medium-sized city anywhere else in the country. And the size of our state is one-fifth the rest of the entire United States. On a per capita basis, Alaska's costs are always going to be disproportionate.
All right. Thank you so much. Lieutenant Governor Malott and Governor Bill Walker are on hand with us today on Talk of Alaska. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll cram in a few more calls and questions as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Let's go back to the phones. Gary is in Norvik. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
Hello. Yes, my comment would be, in other states, don't they tax people for coming to work in their states? Is that something that could be implemented and probably should have been done here in the state of Alaska years ago, but if they come up and work and then take everything back with them, isn't there something that could be done there in that respect?
Governor Walker?
You know, actually, we've certainly looked at that, and it does not appear to be a mechanism to do that. Folks of the U.S. need to be treated equally as far as how they're on the employment and taxes, et cetera. So that's not an option. We have certainly considered that. Everybody, we looked at the school tax. We used to have a school tax years ago in Alaska. We looked at that. That was a $10 per person that would pay per, you know, first paycheck, whatnot. Obviously, $10 today wouldn't move the dial very much. But so we have looked at that, and really, you can't legislate local hire, but you certainly can welcome them through an income tax concept. But let me just mention how much I like Talk of Alaska. It's so unique to be able to talk to somebody in, you know, in Ketchikan, Gary, and Norvik, where actually one of our tribal advisor, Paulette Shirk, is from Norvik. So somebody from Nulato called in. That's so unique to be able to do that in as Lieutenant Governor says, a state that's a fifth the size of the United States. So anyway, I just had to mention that because I've always enjoyed that part of the show.
Thank you, Governor. Let's stay with the phones just for a moment here. Bernie is in Fairbanks. Hi, Bernie. Did you have a question for the governor?
Yes. Thank you. Good morning, Lori. And good morning, Governor Walker. And good morning, Governor Millett. Thank you for this opportunity and for listening to Alaskans. I did have an 8-point plan, probably similar to yours, Governor Walker. I'm going to go through it real quick, and then I really would like to get your input on my last point. I'd like to see 20% cuts across board for state spending. I know we're probably close to that right now. Institute a 5% sales tax, or state income tax, repeal or modify SB 21, double the taxes on alcohol, tobacco, triple the taxes on gasoline, suspend the Kennecott Bridge, the Sitna Dam, and the roads that are being built into the bush, the Ambler Road. And I'd like to see a state income tax with the exemptions on food, health care, water, and prescriptions. My last one is to tap the dividend for education only, and that would, with the exemption of not building structures with the tapping of the fund. You are correct in that. We are all going to have to make sacrifices, and I think all Alaskans are ready to do that, and we really appreciate your leadership, and we are looking forward to going forward with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie, for your call. Governor?
Well, Bernie, thank you for that. It sounds like you've gone through the same exercise we have. A lot of those sound very familiar about, you know, how much you adjust each one of those. We have significantly increased some on the liquor tax and cigarette taxes have gone up significantly. We have adjusted the fuel tax. You know, it has not been increased since sometime in the 60s when John F. Kennedy was president. So we made an adjustment there. So we have made, about 6 or 7 adjustments. Only one new tax we brought back, and that was obviously the income tax. But you're on the right track as far as, you know, broad base. It's not all one area of Alaska, not all one industry. So I appreciate those suggestions and very much. So that's the kind of input we've received over the past year, quite honestly.
Just a quick comment, if I could.
Sure. Yes, Lieutenant Governor.
The notion of funding education from some kind of consistent source is the kind of thing that will be much more easy to do with the governor's plan. That is, with all petroleum revenue going into the permanent fund, the huge size of the permanent fund being able to absorb any petroleum price shocks over time, we can have a sustainable, consistent source of funding for government going forward that would make it able to plan ahead, look at issues like forward funding, not necessarily direct forward funding, but able to project revenue many years into the future for education and for other public services that are so sensitive and require consistent funding over time.
Governor, we've had a number of emails, and I will forward those to your office after Talk of Alaska concludes today. But here's one from someone that I've heard this idea brought up many times from Alaskans. Why can't Alaska start our own oil company, get the oil tax, the oil credits, and sell the oil? Why could this, why has this not happened in the past, Governor?
Well, Laurie, I think that's a, I mean, it's a good question. It hasn't happened in the past because it wasn't needed in the past. I think sometimes people do things because things are needed. And in hindsight, it probably would have been a good thing to do in some respects. You know, we've tried to sort of stay out of the private sector do this private sector thing and whatnot, and we sort of stay out of that. But, you know, because of the makeup of the statehood compact, we are an owner state. We own the resources in the ground. We cannot sell them in the ground. We can only live off the extraction of them. So we have looked at that. That has come up. Now would be it's certainly been part of the discussion about that when we're paying some of the tax credits are fairly significant in the past as far as the we pay for it. So it's certainly been discussed as a possibility. We do have a little bit of that in some respect with what we're doing with AKLNG is a bit of a way of sort of being at the table and in a private table as a slice of government. So we are doing that a bit right now.
All right, let's quickly go to one last call. Thomas is in Anchorage. Thomas, can you make your point or question quick, please?
Well, I'd just like the state to continue, or I would like the state to invest in things like a mini gas pipeline to Fairbanks, where they could turn it into electricity to sell it to Homer and get the twin dams going, and then they could raise the rate to 8 cents a kilowatt instead of the 15 that we're paying, and invest profitably.
All right. Well, thank you, Thomas, for that comment. Governor Walker and Lieutenant Governor Malott, thank you so much for being on with us today. We appreciate your time and your efforts on trying to shore up the state's budget. Next week on Talk of Alaska, we'll bring state lawmakers on with us to tell us what their ideas are. Thanks so much to Dave Waldron, our engineer, and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Laurie Townsend. We'll be back next week.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by GCI, an Alaska-born and raised company connecting Alaskans from the Aleutian to the Arctic, from the North Slope to Southeast, and to the rest of the world. With more than 2,000 employees statewide, a proud supporter of Alaska Public Media. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive educational adventure designed to support your personal and professional goals. Through generous APU scholarship packages and the new APU Promise Tuition Grant Program, APU is a sound educational investment in your future. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.